Aloha everyone and welcome to Aquarium Radio at aquariumradio.com. Hi, I am your host Janicure Lesson with my co-host Dr. Sasha Lesson, and today we are attempting a simulcast with Dave Schmidt as he interviews Michael Lee Hill, and Dave's show is called The Sedona Connection, and we are doing an episode of We the Anunnaki with Michael Lee Hill, Dave Schmidt, Janicure Lesson, and Dr. Sasha Lesson. And we've had both Dave and Michael on our show, Aquarium Radio, many times, and we continue to connect the dots and unveil the information behind the nature of the various factions of the Illuminati and how they play with the hearts, minds, and souls of humanity. And each time researchers, authors, investigators, and experiencers meet to share these experiences, we gain more knowledge and awareness of this fascinating, super complicated interplay. So I'm going to attempt to call the other show right now. Bear with me one moment. Oh, here we go. I think it's there. I'm going to unmute and we'll see if we can join the show, which probably has just started. Okay, that's not working. So I think I'm just going to call into this show. Wait, here we go.
And how is it there in Atlanta, Georgia tonight?
Oh, we're doing super over here. Oh, wonderful. Of course, for us, it's cold as well. We're at about 30 right now in Atlanta. That's cold for us. And we had a little bit of snow yesterday, probably not as much as you did. So we're doing cold over here today.
It looks like the East Coast is getting the cold and the West is, you know, the Western U.S. is getting the warm weather. Yeah,
right.
But I'm going back home tomorrow. It'll be nice to be back home. And then, yes, next week, folks, I head to Hawaii because we have our workshop on February 20th in Maui.
Nice.
And so we would always remember there's still plenty of room for the workshop. If you want to feel you want to come to Maui for a vacation at the last minute, you're always more than welcome to join us there. That's a special occasion, a special hosted workshop I'm doing with the folks there. And I am, folks, looking at next month. And this is just anticipation. It's not etched in stone yet, but I'm looking at probably the third Saturday in March. I'll be back and doing one in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We always get such a wonderful audience there, and it's always such great people that are there. So I'm looking at doing that next month. Plugging away on my book, I'm about 165 pages into the book, getting a little distracted because I'm here with Michael, but yet this is an extremely important place to be.
Next chapter.
It's the next chapter. So, you know, folks, so with that, Blanca, is there anything you want to say before I go into a little more introducing Michael tonight?
No, I just am very, very excited about the program and very pleased that Michael has agreed to join us. He's a wealth of information and inspirational as well, so I'm looking forward to that.
Good. I do want to mention also that Sasha and Janet Lesson are simulcasting this program tonight on their radio network, which means so I'm not just on my channel here on Blog Talk Radio tonight. I'm also on with their radio program. I have to apologize. I'm not familiar with their name, but
Aquarian Radio.
Are they doing Aquarian Radio tonight as well? I know that Janet said they're simulcasting the program tonight, and so it's being heard on two different stations tonight. And they are supposed to be calling in here shortly because they're going to be joining us on a conversation. I'll start right out up front. There was some information that had been released yesterday with David Wilcock and Corey Good for the interviews they do on Gaia TV. And in this one, Corey Good says he basically goes into the inner part of the Earth, meets with an ET race, and there is an ET being there that's called Carrie, and she takes him into a library and shows him books of Zachariah Sitchin. They basically kind of in some ways discredit some of the things that he has to say. We will talk about that a little bit. It's not going to be the main focus of the program, but we clearly want to say, and we'll show this here tonight, there are two sides to that story. And it's extremely important that regardless of the opinion that you take, that we don't fall into attacking each other, because that's exactly what you would say the cabal, the Illuminati, would want us to do. They would want us to get into fighting, attacking, creating discord and division and disagreement. In some ways, it's not, the issue is not as big as it has appeared to be, but it has the potential for you to want to take sides. And we're not here to take sides. But here tonight, folks, I'm sitting with a gentleman that I am absolutely delighted to become acquainted with. I know we're going to be doing more work together. Michael, welcome to the Sedona Connection tonight.
Thanks, Dave. It's been wonderful to spend the time with you and getting to hang out and pick your brain and hallelujah.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about your background, I think, because these listeners on this program, you're going to be new to most of these people. I have said you're a pretty unique individual, and the uniqueness comes back down to who, in the last 8 years, that you discovered who you are, and it wasn't just the fact that somebody else had told you that. It comes from very, very credible sources who begin to relay that to you, and then you actually had a segment being on the History Channel, and they sent you in for some blood tests. And that revealed something that was quite abnormal. But tell us a little, just take about 5-10 minutes. Let's share your background. What got you to where you are? Okay, yeah.
Well, I've had contact my whole life with, you know, even as a young child, I would be visited by these beings. And to me, I interpreted them as a child as elves. And I'd ask my mom, well, how come Santa Claus's elves are coming to visit me? It's not Christmas. But, you know, when I got into my 20s and 30s, I went the normal route, went, got a job, being a manager and all that kind of stuff. And all the visitation kind of went away. And then I went through a spiritual awakening, I'd call it. And I lived very close to Lake Erie. And around 2005, I started seeing phenomena out over the lake. And they would appear as these beautiful orbs of light that are showing up worldwide right now, by the way, which is interesting. But at this time, it really wasn't happening at the rate that it's happening right now. So I didn't know what it was. But I decided to start going down to the lake and found some beaches, you know, along the shoreline there that I could go, and around sunset, and I'd have a camera set up, and if a big ball of light flew by, I was ready to film it. And after doing that for, I don't know, about a year, I had quite a library of footage that had been accumulated. And so I decided to put some of the stuff up on YouTube, and the next thing I knew, some of the footage went viral. And my YouTube page is Frozen Hill, and all one word. And you can see it's like 4.5 million views right now, which is crazy. But that brought the History Channel to my door. And at first it was just going to be a 5-minute segment within an episode of Sky Watchers and about some of my footage going viral and whatnot. What had happened was when they came to Cleveland to interview me, they didn't tell me, but they had interviewed another contactee, and his name is Terrell Copeland. And 2 weeks prior to coming to Cleveland for me, they had interviewed him, and he had filmed the same orbs of light that I had. He had the same story of contact and the same spiritual message given to him, which is the whole thoughts create reality bed of information that has become so prevalent through, you know, like what the bleep do we know and the secret and whatnot. So the thing about this is Terrell was a Marine, and he got discharged from the military because he was getting sent overseas, and they did a thorough medical examination, and they found out he had an unknown blood anomaly, and so he was given an honorary discharge. Well, when the History Channel found this out, and they said, here's these two guys that are separated by 500 miles and, you know, totally different backgrounds, yet they filmed the same objects, same story of contact, same message. They said, we wondered, what if this other guy had that same unknown blood anomaly? So they decided to send us both to Boston to have our blood work done. And at this time, I can tell you, they're probably smart they didn't tell me what was going on, because I'm a big old baby and I hate needles. And I probably would have said no. It's almost like a phobia. I've never even given blood. I want to keep my blood in my body,
yeah,
you know. But they told me, you know, we've decided to do an update to your segment. Would you be willing to come to Boston? I'm like, oh, sure. Well, when I got there, that's when I realized, and they told me the next day we're going to Boston University or the main hospital there connected with Harvard. And what happened was they had a Harvard professor, his name David Systrom, and he did our blood work, and sure enough, they revealed I didn't have normal human blood. What had happened then, because of the story that unfolded, the show changed from being just a five-minute segment on Skywatchers to the whole episode being on me and Terrell. And it's called Alien Contact, and it's in season one, and it's also in Bill Burns, who is the host. He released a book in, I believe it's 2013 or 2012, called UFO Hunters, the Book. And, you know, I didn't know what the History Channel thought of our episode, but it was really interesting when I read his book to find out that that is the episode that got UFO Hunters renewed for season two. And he said that they thought that that is the episode that encapsulated the whole idea behind UFO Hunters. And so that's pretty cool, you know, and it's become a fan favorite. But as I said, the last day of production, they revealed to me that I had the same blood anomaly. And I can get into what that blood anomaly
is.
Yeah,
just go ahead and explain it briefly, because I see that as something that's extremely significant.
Yeah, because people, well, what's the difference? Yeah. You know, what did they find?
Right.
And everyone's brain releases an enzyme called creatine kinase. And the normal amounts of that enzyme in the blood is 25 parts per liter of blood. And if you've had a heart attack or some kind of muscle damage or ripped a muscle, your brain releases more creatine kinase because it brings oxygen into the blood to facilitate healing. And it'll go up to about 250 to about 300 parts per liter of blood when someone has hurt themselves. 25 is the baseline level. What they found in mine and Terrell's, and we are almost identical levels, by the way, it was 2,100. Where so if the normal is 25, you know, 2,100 is super oxygenating,
yes,
the bloodstream. And what I found out, we can get into some of the contact with insiders or whatnot, but the amount of oxygen in the blood equates to how much chi or electrical capacitance you're holding on a cellular level. But at this time, all I knew was they had this crazy amount of creatine kinase in our blood that this Harvard professor had revealed. And he told us off camera, this isn't in the show, but he said the only thing I could think of is some kind of unknown virus. He said all viruses aren't bad. We kind of think, well, it's a virus, it's bad, but they can actually work at the level of DNA. He said it could be some kind of unknown virus that we don't know about that's tricking the brain into releasing these massive amounts of creatine kinase, because what they found was there, usually it only goes up to about 250, 300 tops if you've had bodily damage, but we have no health issues. There's no reason that our body should be, but I can tell you, we can get into this later, but this group of insiders that I was brought into, they told me that there was 12 members of their group that had the same bloodline, and that my levels of 2,100 would put me in about the middle of those, with the highest being 12,000, just so you know.
And this group of 12 that you have been involved in, there in essence has been a part of another group and organization. And it was after that that you then basically had in a contactee, an encounter with some actual Anunnaki, correct?
Well, here's how it unfolded in like a timeline is, the show with the History Channel aired in March of 2008, and right at the same time, two things happened. I met them face-to-face, or faceless is how they actually appeared, in 2008 and in the summer. And simultaneously, I had been groomed into a group of, it's the people who are the remote viewers for the NSA, actually, the people who were teaching, you know, how to send your consciousness elsewhere, psychic spies, I guess. But I guess probably your viewers, listeners know who of what a remote viewer is. But these are the people who are looking into it for the powers that be. And what people don't know is that same group of people started to be able to use that in looking into matters of extraterrestrial intelligence subject for the powers that be as well, because it gets into telepathy, right? Being able to communicate at that level. So the same group was involved in the reverse engineering. They are the people who truly are working with extraterrestrials here on this planet in reverse engineered technology programs. But we can get into that. The group is called the ACIO. And then, but that's all humans that are.
The ACIO, and they're all humans, and mm-hmm. they are basically a step up of the NSA. Is that correct?
Couple steps up. They're the ones that are looking into the extraterrestrial subject for the powers that be. But then you get into, but that's not where the actual extraterrestrials are working with humans in underground
right.
bases.
Right.
That is a more secretive group of the ACIO, which is called the Labyrinth Group. And all of this was revealed to the public, interestingly enough, through a release of information called the Wingmakers. And a lot of people think it's just a mythology and it's put out there, but there's more truth behind this than anyone ever has realized. But
let me step in here, because you and I have talked about this, but if you wanted to go into the arena of what is called intelligence operations, if you wanted to go into the area of absolute top secret security organizations, if you want to accept that there are somewhere between 11 to 13 levels of top secret above the President of the United States, the Labyrinth Group is right there at the top.
Yes.
The Labyrinth Group, if I am hearing you correctly, is the highest level of top secret security operations intelligence organization that there is on this planet.
Yeah.
Nobody is higher than them.
No.
And you were taken into that group.
Yeah. And think about this. You know, if extraterrestrial intelligence, you know, I hate to say, they're not going to talk to Putin or Obama.
No.
They're going to talk to a quantum physicist who is starting to understand how light and sound create physical reality and understand new light physics, as they called it.
Right.
And A.R. Borden was that person. And think of this. The person that's truly the head of these reverse engineering technology programs that, like, Colonel Philip Corso would get this technology from to disseminate into our, you know, the mass population. The person controlling that kind of technology is the person in control.
So I want to come back and reiterate something that is here. The Labyrinth Group is the group of what you would call secret intelligence operations that actually talks and communicates with ETs, aliens, whoever you want to call them, whatever title you want mm-hmm. to put upon them. They talk, they communicate with them, they are with them on a regular basis.
Yes.
And in that group, there was one person at the top, and when you read in the Wingmakers about some of the interviews that went on, he is referred to as 15,
mm-hmm.
and that was always his code name, and you have referred to him as 15.
Yeah.
And this information was coming out in 1998
mm-hmm.
when this information was being released. And you had released the information a few years ago that the individual known as 15, his name was A.R. Borden.
Yeah, it was about 9 months ago.
About 9 months
mm-hmm.
ago. And you had developed a relationship with you. He was basically taking you under your wings. He was training you. He was working with you. And you had an ongoing personal relationship with, in essence, the absolute top intelligence secret ET contact on this planet.
I was told to look at him as the president of the Earth, as
yeah.
far as they're concerned. That's the person they talk to, is
yeah.
the person that can understand, starting to understand their level of, you know, knowledge of how physical reality
yeah.
truly works.
I want to make this statement. Now, most of the listeners here, you know that I have been operating and been in contact with a group called the Dragon Family, who's headquartered out of China.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very clear that that family does exist of royal bloodline from areas around Europe and Asia, the Middle East, and China. It's not just the Chinese. And also, they have been very, very clear to say that they know that they are descendants of the Anunnaki.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that they are the ones that, as it has been explained to me, are basically the holders of the largest gold depositories on this planet. They basically, in essence, in what I would call in a shadow operation, run and control the world's money supply is what they have to do. But what's happening here is we're now opening up a new channel line of information, of contacts with the Anunnaki. And what, folks, what I am able to do with you tonight, of what you just heard, is from Michael here. Michael is the man who was in contact is a part of the Labyrinth group, does still have communication with them, was in contact, personal contact and friendship with A.R. Borden, and this is the man that the ETs, the Anunnaki themselves, says is the president of the Earth. So, folks, this is just about as deep as an intelligence contact that you can get. And when Michael and I are sitting here together, you're going to hear some more information tonight about quite often the Anunnaki are presented in a bad light. They are presented as the dark force. They are presented as the ETs who can be behind the Illuminati. But we are very, very clear to say that there are two different bloodlines of the Anunnaki, and there are black hats groups and there are white hats groups. And Michael is out of the white hats group. And what Borden was doing, even though some of it was what you would call clandestine in its operations, it was still a white hat operation that he was involved with. But yet, even he admitted within the Labyrinth group, there were both black hats and white hats within the group. Because he had told Michael, you have to be careful because not everybody is of, you know, what you call the true group. So, folks, I want you to know that you're really getting to the source here tonight. You're getting right to the source of an individual who over the last about 8 to 9 years has come to discover who he is, what's going on in his life. He has this extra anomaly of blood with it. He can carry an extreme amount of high energy within his body. And there's some very deep, what I would call metaphysical giftedness that comes through this man because he has abnormal energy. If you want to meet a guy who has the ability to vibrate at an extremely high vibration, this would be the dude.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting, Michael, I want to say this tonight to all the people. You know, when people look at your picture, you're just this rock guitar musician who has this long hair. And kind of just like a typical rock musician dude. But I looked at you, and your eyes were shining. Mm. There was a shining and a brilliance within your eyes when I first made contact with you, when I walked up here to your house, knocked on your door, and you opened the door. Because I usually do that. I like to look at the people's eyes. And I said, this guy's eyes are different. There's a clarity and a shining and a brightness that is in there. And it was just a pleasure to become acquainted with you. So,
thank you for the warm regard.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit more about your relationship with AR Borden and the organization there.
Well, what happened, first of all, this is crazy to me. First of all, it is 20 degrees here. When you have such a great microphone. When this heater kicks on, it sounds like there's like a cyclone.
Oh, yeah. So, let me see if I can turn the gain down just a little bit.
No, it's all good.
Because, folks, what you're hearing
is... Can you turn down the thermostat?
What you're hearing in the background, folks, is that the heater kicked on, and the
trying to keep warm and cozy
going on here in the house where it's 20 degrees outside. So that's the hum you're hearing in the background. So no, there's nobody coming in and trying to take control of the show.
There's okay? No UFO over us.
Yeah, there's no going on here. Okay, so
so what happened was when I met the History Channel show.
Hey, I have to say this. Blanca just wrote me a little text message. She thought it was your spacecraft humming. All right.
Yeah, it's humming at 432.
It's humming at 432 megahertz. That's right. That's another story.
Yes. Go ahead,
dude. Okay.
So the show airs in March of 2008. In the summer of 2008, I'm met by the Anunnaki in the physical at a festival. And they said, we want to talk to you about what was revealed on the History Channel. And what has been revealed is that you're part of what is called the Nephilim bloodline. And, I was agnostic not too long ago. And so didn't know what an Anunnaki was, didn't really know what the Nephilim was. And they said, well, you'll start to understand this. And I can get into what happened a little bit on that first meeting.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and do that? I like it about the guy that shows up with this little device.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's really it. That's something.
First of all, I didn't know. I had a friend who owned a metaphysical jewelry store, and she was going to this festival, and it's called Sirius Rising. It's in New York, and at that time, I didn't know that Anunnaki are Syrians, because they are, you know. So, you know, it should have been called Anunnaki Rising, right? But I go there, and I'm thinking I'm going on a camping trip, and here it's really, let me tell you, there was a serpent symbology everywhere. Like, that was strange to me too, because I didn't understand it at that point. What had happened was a gentleman there kind of took me under his wing, and when later on this night at this festival, they're doing these huge like rituals and dance around fire and everything, and me and him are standing there, and he said, "I'm going to go back to the campsite, and because this place where it is, you could actually own a campsite there and have, so people will put permanent structures there that will be like a deck and, you know, gazebos and whatnot." And the friend of mine knew a woman who owned the land there. And so this gentleman's like, "I'm going to go back and just make sure everything's buttoned down." I had nothing to do. So I'll go with you, you know? So when we go back there, they had a structure that was there. They called it the genie bottle. Because once you got in it, it looked like the I Dream a Genie show from the 60s.
Uh-huh.
You know, it had all this beautiful fabric all around it, and it was round. It had a chandelier hanging in the middle of it, and the whole thing was candlelit. And the first thing, when we got back to the campground, this gentleman says, "There's some individuals waiting to talk to you in the genie bottle." I'm thinking, well, that's strange, you know. But he didn't even go in with me. He said, "Just go into the genie bottle." So when I went into the genie bottle, the first thing I noticed is they had a round couch that maybe like two people could fit on there pretty easily. And there was two people. It was a male and a female. And I could see everything up to their necks perfectly. But when you got to their neck, above it, they were faceless. It was like their face had almost looked like smoke or something obscuring their face. But it was weird, because I'm thinking, is this just a shadow of how the lighting is in here? But if they move their face, it's like they're still faceless. My first words to them were, "Can I see your real faces?" And he said, "No, you'll have to wait till tomorrow to see our true faces." And right then, and I'm like, okay, this is getting strange, because not only did he, like, what are you talking about? He's like, "No, I know you can't see my face. That's the point, you know?"
Right.
I'm told that I'm sitting before the king of the Anunnaki. And again, I said, I don't know what an Anunnaki even is at this point. But he said, "We've been told that you've been filming us over Lake Erie." And I said, "Well, I guess, you know?" And he said, this was the strange thing, because right after this initial introduction, he said, "Do you know anything about a gentleman that was just on the Coast to Coast radio show talking about a senior scientist from Lockheed Martin named Boyd Bushman?" And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I know everything about it, because that's from the movie me and David Sarita had partnered on, because I met David because he used my UFO footage in the Dan Aykroyd UFOs Unplugged with Dan Aykroyd. He's about four of my clips, and that began a lifelong friendship to this point with David. Brilliant guy. But in our film that we partnered on, From Here to Andromeda, John Hutchinson, are you familiar with John?
I just know the name, yeah.
He's like the mad scientist creating anti-gravity. Well, I think it's in Canada. But Lockheed Martin was trying to get him to work for Lockheed, because he is the real deal. And so at the end of the production schedule, somehow John had connected David with Boyd Bushman, who is a senior scientist of Lockheed Martin. For those people that don't know, Lockheed Martin is the company who makes stealth fighters, stealth bombers. They make the most advanced technology on this planet. And Boyd Bushman gave us an interview and just spilled the beans. He showed us working anti-gravity. He showed us the blueprints of the first craft that was reverse engineered from the Roswell craft that was built by Boeing and Conair. And that flew in 1959. And so in the film, we were able to do that. And Boyd just spilled the beans. He's getting older, and he's like, "You know what? They don't scare me anymore. People need to know this." And he just revealed it. By the way, this is the same Boyd Bushman that just recently then had this deathbed confession. And again, just spilled the beans. And they had this cover story right away. Oh, that's just a Kmart Halloween doll or some BS. I can tell you the higher ups really took Boyd Bushman very seriously. So once I said, I know everything about it, that's mine and David's film, this gentleman said, well, you've created a lot of problems for us. I work for a group of people who decide what gets released to the public regarding the extraterrestrial subject, and this was not on the list. He said, you've created a lot of problems, a lot of finger pointing, and a lot of people really pissed off behind the scenes. And he said, how did this come to be? How did this get into reality? Because we're the ones that decide. And I said, I willed it into manifestation. I seemed to get his attention. You know, mm-hmm. He's like, what are you talking about? And I said, I think it's BS that this has been withheld from humanity, because truly it's stopping the evolution of mankind. And I will do everything in my power to help people realize we're not alone. Because in my mind, that's a big time out for everyone to rethink everything we thought we knew, because evidently we were wrong. And with my own contact, it wasn't even a question that we're not alone. And at this point, he looked at me kind of dazed, like, what the hell's going on? He said, we need to know what you know. And he said, this won't hurt. And he brought out this device, and it looked like a wand almost that had a purple diode at the end of it. And he pointed it towards my face, and I felt it stimulating my third eye. Actually felt really good. I can remember my exact words. I said, truth serum. Have at it, man. I don't care. At this point, everything changes. I've found out from the insiders, from AR, 15, that this technology, this light technology, is exactly what they use. And he said there's very there's ways that they can use that are well beyond a polygraph test to find out what you know, and that this light technology that I was talking about is exactly what they use. And what happens is, if your listeners might be familiar with the concept of the Akashic records,
right?
You know, that all consciousness, no matter what, is put into a cosmic library through all timelines and whatnot. Well, this technology that they use, they can go through your pineal gland right into your Akashic records and see exactly who you are, every life you've lived or will live, you know. And all of a sudden, he became in tears. Now, mind you, first of all, I'll just keep going. He became in tears, and he said, oh, my God, how is it that you're sitting here? We've been waiting for you to surface. And how is it that you're sitting here? It's a miracle. And I said, I'm here camping, you know. And
I'm just a camping dude. I don't already know what Anunnaki is.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, you've got this Anunnaki being, you know, shooting this thing into your pineal gland and reading your Akashic record. And he starts to go in tears and says, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
We have been waiting for you. How did you get here?
Well, what he said is, we've been waiting for you to surface, and we've been waiting to have a council meeting. And he said, we could have it right now if it's okay with you. Now, first of all, it was just very antagonistic, you know, and all of a sudden now he's like very subservient, or, you know, it's weird. It's like, what the hell's going on? You know, I said, I don't know what you're talking about, but what is this meeting over? And he said, very soon there would be a celestial object that would be visible in our skies, and it wouldn't be debatable, you know. It wouldn't be something that people are going to be skeptical about, because you're going to look outside and it's going to be in the skies. And he said, Nibiru is coming back into our solar system, and they wanted to know everyone, because when they asked me if I would do this meeting, they said they wanted to talk about this celestial object coming in, what our opinion was, the effect on Earth's institutions, being economic, governmental, religious, you know. And so I said, well, I have no idea what you're talking about with this planet or whatever, but I am very interested in the UFO subject, and I'll give you my opinion. I'll absolutely talk about it. He said, fantastic. So all of a sudden, first of all, I can tell you these little lights started showing up all over, like little, they almost look like fireflies on the outside of the genie bottle. And he says, wow, we're getting a lot of visitors, aren't we? I go, wow, okay. But these other individuals enter the structure, and really, this who I was told was the king of the Anunnaki, which I now realize is Marduk, because he's been in charge of the Earth realm for a very long time. We can get into that, but they went into the structure, and every single person just told their opinion on what they thought would, you know, be. And a lot of us had the same opinion that if humanity was freed from this survival mode that we've been, economic slavery that we've been put into, and the stranglehold and manipulation of the powers that be over humanity, if those things were removed, because I'm, you know, what I said is, because a lot of people were fearful that we're just not ready for this. I'm like, every judgment that you're making of humanity is a humanity that's been manipulated and controlled. And why not? I think humanity has so much more potential than that if we weren't controlled and put into the slavery system. Right. And I said, you know, I don't, it's like we're not being given a fair shot. And what I can tell you is the end of the meeting was that everyone agreed that mankind had earned the right to be treated as equals. That was their own words. And that,
so the human race had been earned the right to be treated as equals as these ET race, the Anunnaki.
Yeah, well, because some of them, we can get into this, but very long ago there was an experiment that was, because they're very instrumental in Earth's past history. They're very intertwined. But getting back to the genie bottle, you know, that was the ending of that meeting with them. And I asked, I said, well, what's going to happen? They said, we're going to begin revealing the reality of our race and the planet to the masses. And I said, when? And he said, obviously before 2012. And he said it, like I asked a dumb question, like it irritated him.
Uh-huh.
What I think of this is in 2008. And I can tell you, when I left this meeting, I got home and I went to Google and I tried to find some information on Anunnaki. And there was hardly nothing out there. You know, it was sparse. That, but 2009, Ancient Aliens began.
Right.
So I think really that was their saying, we're going to start preparing the masses for the reality of this bigger picture.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because see, you had this encounter with them in 2008. Mm-hmm. Ancient Aliens wasn't around. You could hardly find anything about Anunnaki on, you know, just by doing a Google 2008. 2009, Ancient Aliens come in.
Yeah.
That starts going on. History Channel's having programs. Discovery Channel's having programs. We're finding more and more sightings are beginning to take place. And now we're seeing, you know, for those of us that operate in circles like this, disclosure is almost like a second term to us, because we're anticipating and we're waiting for all this. And so we've seen this massive shift and change of the awakening and the awareness that is the time. And so, and you, and then I think probably the next step is of how you became acquainted with A.R. Borden and the Labyrinth Group and what was involved in there, because I think that was probably the next step for you, right?
Well, what happened was I was a student of the Wingmakers, big time.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened was the new, like, first of all, we should tell the listeners, go to wingmakers.com and read the Neruda interviews.
Right.
What had happened is in, you know, the late 90s, I started being fascinated by the Wingmakers site. And I started to take those Neruda interviews and just pick them apart. If a name was given, I went and researched it and seen if that person was a real person, mm-hmm. and in the position that they said that person was in. Sure enough, every single time, the data was absolutely accurate. I'm thinking, well, this is strange. And they're giving examples of, like, reverse engineered technology that was disseminated. And I would go there and I showed you the place, you know, in the Labyrinth Group. Someone asked, is there any reverse engineered technology that could be traced back to the Labyrinth Group? And they're like, well, pretty much smarter than that, but we will tell you that reverse engineered alien computer algorithms were given to Russia by a company called Fazatron, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Or,
yeah.
And it was radar systems that were off the charts. And sure enough, it's real. So as I went through this Neruda interviews, I was doing all this study, and I found out that it was more real than people were knowing. But because of this, I came across some leaked onto the internet LERM documents. And because I knew what LERM was, it stands for Light Encoded Reality Matrix. And truly, if look into the subject of tulpas, T-U-L-P-A, from Tibet. And the Tibetan monks will meditate on the thought form of a revered monk with such tenacity that that monk will appear in the physical and manifest. And the monk will appear in the physical with innate built-in consciousness of that being, that the people that are willing it in a manifestation aren't creating the consciousness. It just comes from the ether, and it is that monk in the physical.
Yeah.
So what happened was the NSA said, well, let's make it into a science. Let's take this process of taking mental energy and creating physical objects from light and sound. And, you know, that's why it's so important that, you know, that's one thing that AR told me is, he said, you'll learn about the Pythagorean scale and tuning, because that is the frequencies that physical creation is actually manifested from. And that's where I started to learn about the 432 hertz frequency.
Let's do this. I want to bring this up. You were deeply into the Wingmakers information before you had the encounter with them in 2008. The Neruda interviews were first, there were five interviews, and the first four were published in 1998. Mm-hmm. And it's in there that you're going to be able to go on and you're going to be able to read. You'll get to understand about the Labyrinth Group, the secrecies that is there. You're going to be introduced to 15, who was the head of the Labyrinth Group that we can later know as A.R. Borden.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was Dr. Neruda who was breaking away from the Labyrinth Group and trying to get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some ways, he presents that 15 and that group in a not-so-necessary positive light. But what you had learned, what you had shared with me, is that that was all a designed plan, because it was designed to kind of be a, I guess, a smokescreen or a shield, in so many words. Because you're saying that A.R. Borden, who was 15, always was somebody that was working as a white hat, even though sometimes he could have been portrayed as something that was the opposite.
Man, this gets in, you know, I have no doubt. Because of the position he was in, I've been told to think of A.R. Borden, his behavior, more so as like an overprotective and very cautious that information wouldn't be revealed. It would actually be detrimental to the masses. We're not ready, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if you look at his behavior from that viewpoint, you know, I got the chance to interview Mark Hempel, who brought the Wingmakers, because I was doing a show with some people of, actually is the group that we're talking about, but we interviewed Mark, and we, you know, the everyone that was interviewing Mark Hempel of the Wingmakers, we knew when we were asking him about 15, we were already working with A.R. Borden. We knew who he was. So we asked him, he said, A.R. Borden, he said 15 is, there's no doubt that he's the villain in the story, but he's the villain that you learn to love because you start to understand where he's coming from.
Okay, that's a good description. And you had been you've been working with A.R. Borden, and it was about 2.5 years ago that he died.
Yeah.
And what all of you believe was he came down with an extremely fast, rapid-spreading cancer, and he died within a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of you are believing, and even what he had said, is that was something that was implanted into him because you had basically pissed off the wrong people. In essence, you pissed off some of the Illuminati and the cabal.
The transhumanists. Yeah.
And here's what's interesting. If you read all five of, you know, the interviews, the fifth one, even though it was done in 1998, it was not released until just 2 years ago. And in that, they talk about the transhumanist. What is, if you want to really look at what I would call is an agenda of the Illuminati and the Cabal, it's the transhumanist agenda.
Yeah, look at the Georgia Guidestones.
Absolutely.
They put their what they want to do in stone. It's, you know, it's right there.
Georgia Guidestones, this transhumanist agenda, they have what is called a depopulation agenda. They want to basically rid the Earth of most of its population. In the Georgia Guidestones, it said that they would like to get it down to only 500 million people here on the planet, where we are now planted at 7 billion people. And it's interesting because it was about a year and a half ago when I was having a discussion with the ambassador of the Dragon Family. He said that there were cabal that came to the Council of Elders of the Dragon Family and asked them to have permission to eliminate one-third of the Earth's population.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because even as you have this organization of this Council of Elders with the Dragon Family, where the council as a majority said no, there were a few members of the council that were in favor of that.
Yeah.
So you can see even there in the Council of the Dragon Family that they're split. They don't all agree. There's some very strong disagreements that even exist at that level. And so we saw that there was this effort, and yet what you're saying is the people that you're in association with and the Anunnaki that is in contacting with you, they are what we would call the white hat line that is here to fix what has gone on, to help us as the human race through our growth and our process. And part of that is freeing ourselves from financial slavery, and that's where this whole issue of the release of the funds comes in.
Indeed.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about, let's go back to the Illuminati family. Now, let's do this. Let's go ahead and for a brief period of time, let's discuss this issue of the interview that recently came out with Corey Good and David Wilcock, because of how they have presented Zachariah Sitchin. And what I want to do, I'm going to go ahead and bring on Janet and Sasha Lesson, and they are coming here on the air. Hey, Janet and Sasha, you're here with us, and I know you're listening.
Hi.
To the
We're doing
so
great.
So good to hear your voice, Janet.
Oh, it's so good to hear you, Michael. Say hi, Sasha.
Hi, Sasha.
Hey,
Sasha.
And folks, you know for the last 3 and 4 weeks, I have had Janet and Sasha on my radio program. You know who they are. We also did a joint program together on their Aquarian radio station. I think that was from understanding the role of the Dragon Family and the releasing of the funds. That was probably one of the best programs I had put out, and I'm not apologizing for that. And the comments from you coming in, folks, have been very well as well. But, you know, Janet and Sasha, you, first of all, what we're seeing are some ET beings that are discrediting what Zachariah Sitchin had said. And I want to be very clear tonight. We are not here to discredit Corey Good or David Wilcock. We're not here to discredit Carrie, who is the ET being who had given him access to this library. But she did say that the writings of Sitchin, that he was basically told what to say by Illuminati. Now, there might be some what I call some secondary agenda behind that to create dysfunction, to create disagreement, to create us putting us into a situation where we're arguing and fighting with each other. And we're getting caught up in what I would call minute minutia that all it's doing is creating more problems and it's not solving anything. So, but what I want to do is let you folks share your side of the story, because you had worked with Zachariah Sitchin for a number of years, and not only that, when he was passing away, he basically passed his baton on to you. So how would you take a few, maybe about 5 minutes or so, and just address that issue?
Okay, yeah. What was written down in Sumerian, way after the events occurred, was things that Anunnaki dictated to their scribes, and each one of them had their own take. Just as, you know, if Donald Trump and Hillary were both telling the history of the United States, it would sound very different. Well, all of these guys are in telling their history to their scribes had different versions of it, and they are propagandizing. And the what really makes it complex is that they incorporated within themselves the subpersonalities of other Anunnaki. So Marduk, Prince Marduk, for example, says, you know, I have incorporated within myself the powers of, and then he lists all the, you know, Enlil and Ki and so forth. And so right to this day, you look at the works of Penray, Marduk and Supreme and Rockefeller and others are realizing that we have incorporated within ourselves the gods or the Anunnaki, the threads of consciousness that the various Anunnaki have put out. And we're not just one, but we're a whole bunch of them. And then there's the thing about the Anunnaki didn't say everything to their scribes about what was going on and about the other races. They're just trying to propagandize for their own purposes, but there's lots of spacefaring peoples that have earned contact with the Earth. And the thing about what Corey Good or other people heard from some of the races that have been are underground or in near-Earth orbit is their versions, and they're probably all to some degree true. You know, reality is an elephant, and some people have it by the balls, and some people have it by the trunk.
Janet, you know, Sasha, thank you. And I think that's a great definition, but I'm sorry. Janet, go ahead and say something, Janet. I think you want to say something.
Okay, well, you can give Sasha some praise. He deserves that.
Yeah.
I was looking at the article, and they're worrying, you know, they're arguing semantics, and they were saying about the word Anunnaki, and it's all Sitchin's invalid because he said that Anunnaki doesn't mean... Oh, what was it, though, about the royal bloodline? You know, it's just like the word aloha. It means good, hello, goodbye. What else are some of the meanings of aloha? It has medimit, love, means love. So, and you look at any dictionary to many of the English words, they have many, many meanings. So I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think it's true that it means various things. So I don't understand that. What I noticed in the extraterrestrial UFO field that there's a tendency to be kind of petty with each other, and I want to invite everybody to knock it off. There's so few of us, and there's so many of them. There's so many of the cabal, and we need to unite and love each other and share information kindly and respect each other's research and realize that, you know, like Sasha said, we all have a different piece of the elephant. We're going to have different interpretations. There are many different factions here. The Anunnaki have different factions, but the extraterrestrials have different factions. And they've been coming here, as Michael Cramo shows in his research, for millions, if not billions of years. And, of course, we've been one universal galactic experiment going back to the dawn of creation of all existence. And mixing and matching and mating and combining our DNA. The creatures that the Anunnaki found here as they further evolved and fine-tuned certainly have many different extraterrestrial DNA in their composition. And I'm getting
it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting, Janet. You commented on something there. It's like you have both said here now, there's different stories, different versions, and even the scribes for the Anunnaki would sometimes be in disagreement with each other. And yes, the name Anunnaki, it is just a petty issue because, yes, it does mean royal bloodline, but it also is described in the Bible as the gods who came from the sky. So there's correctness in both of that, but yet it's a petty issue. Here's what's interesting is when I read this article today that talked about, you know, this ET being by the name of, you know, Curie, it's almost like she's wanting to get into a tit for tat with the Anunnaki. Says, you're saying stuff that we did, but it was us and not you. And it's like they're wanting to have the spotlight, and they're using Corey Good to be able to express what they wanted. And when it really comes down to, yes, there might have been some battling going on between those different two ET races, and they're stepping in and wanting to use us as humans to be able to be the, you know, what I call the justification of their battle. And it sounds like almost like it's a battle that's going on between these two ET races, and they're trying to draw us in and make us take sides.
And they're all wrong. That's not their name.
I know. And that's the issue. And I'll get into that in just a little bit, you know, Michael. You can express that. But, you know, and I just want to – now – Janet and Sasha, how long did you guys actually work with Sitchin?
We started with him in 98, and we're still part of his group. There are, you know, hundreds if not thousands of Sitchinites, and we gather together and we share notes. We know Jennifer Stein, who worked very closely with Sitchin, and Janet Sitchin, his niece, is still out there doing the work.
And we go on some tours, although we haven't been able to afford to go, but there are still Stitch and I that are doing tours together and comparing notes. So we worked with him about, 10 years until he got to, he died in 2010. So
yeah, and I think both of you are very quick to say, because you worked with him directly for 10 years, this guy was almost a genius. He could read the tablets just as you and I read a book.
Right, he was definitely a genius, and he was heart-centered, and he believed what he was saying. We're both therapists, Sasha and I, and we can tell when, for the most part, when someone, you know, doesn't believe their story. But he definitely believed what he was saying. His heart was open. We saw him actually move from ego to more heart-centered after his open-heart surgery. And he, too, was in contact with the extraterrestrials, especially Enki. He had a personal relationship with Enki, which he revealed to us. He was very cautious about revealing it to us. I think it was in 2008 or 2009 in the Florida conference.
At
Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And he shocked us all when he said he was about to go through his open-heart surgery, and he didn't know he was going to make it. And he sat down on the bed, and he prayed to Enki. Prayer is basically telepathic communication. And he says, please help me get through this. I'll write at least one more book. And he did come through it. And he said on stage, he says, you know what happens when they do open-heart surgery? They open your chest and they open your heart. And so he was much more heart-centered rather than ego-centered. And he did have some kind of ongoing connection with Enki from at least through his life, but from that day forward it was very tangible for him.
And he came out, after that with his wonderful, wonderful book, The King Who Would Not Die, which is the story of Gilgamesh. And he was able there, because he didn't care about shocking people anymore, to tell about some of the very interesting sexual habits of the Anunnaki royalty.
I think it's really important for us to understand that, and to put it into simplistic terms, when you get into the Anunnaki race, there were some pretty bad dudes there. There was some pretty, what we would classify as some really bad behavior that went on amongst them. And there were black cats, and they were about power and control and manipulation over others. But on the other hand, there were some very good ones. And they that had a desire to help, to care, to improve, and to work with us as the humans. And a lot of people don't realize that almost all of the technologies that we have today, the issues of agriculture, advancement, and development had come from them. Now, this article that came out today is saying that this other race that Korea is a part of says, no, it had come from us. And at this point in time, I'm kind of going to say, I don't really care who it came from. That's a petty issue of something that happened tens of thousands of years ago, and we don't need to get in any type of a fight about it, because all that does is delude who we are as a human wanting to move forward.
I would like to say that it isn't just from the Anunnaki that we've got a bad technology. There was an exchange program with the people of Serpo, who saw that the Nazis underneath the Antarctica, who had beaten Byrd in 1947, basically sunk the Pine Islands and beat our military, we were on the verge of being defeated by a resurgent Nazi movement, and the people from Serpo, who had been snooping on our atomic experiments, decided that they would help us, and they sent us an ambassador and received 12 Americans who went to their planet. Their ambassador instructed our people on how to make our hovercraft anti-gravs so that the Nazis haven't taken us over directly, although through Operation Paperclip, they wound up taking us over anyhow, and they're in charge now.
Yeah. Let's do this. I want to bring in Blanca. She had sent me a little text that she had a comment, and I want you to know, folks, I am so pleased and honored to have this lady as my assistant, because she's not just a wonderful assistant on the radio program, but wow, I'm always amazed at the knowledge that she has and the research that she does and how knowledgeable she is about all these issues. Blanca, you wanted to make a comment. Why don't you go ahead and share with us what you have to say?
Oh, yes. Well, it's been a great discussion. And hello, Janet and Sasha. Thanks for joining us again. I think the key things that we're saying here, that we have to be very open-minded and open-hearted, because as we are evolving and as disclosure continues and as we're given this knowledge that we're talking about today, that Sasha and Janet share with us, that Michael, you, David, Corey, and Dave, all this knowledge, if we're going to have a black and white mentality about it, we're not going to make it. We've got to let it filter. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Okay. We've got to take a more heart-centered approach because, for example, even when Corey and Dave were first talking about their meetings with the Inner Earth people, they were saying, oh, these people were lying to some of the earthlings calling themselves gods. And they were wondering whether they should trust these people. So we've got to really filter all that comes through in terms of knowledge and not judge. If we're quick to judge, oh, this guy's bad and this guy's good, I think that's going to trip us up. And yes, I think it'll divide us too. If we think someone's wrong, we're going to be in one camp. And if we think someone's right, we're going to be another. So I think we should just be thankful that we're getting this information and share it and see what are the implications for our continuous transformation, because we're in a very serious transformation mode.